Welcome to On The Record. We are the two Mikes. I'm Mike Graham. Who are you?
I'm Mike Porky Parry.
And here we are once again taking part in one of the greatest things that we love to do, which is basically just talking to each other, informing the nation and the world. We've got a lot of listeners all over the world on this podcast. It comes out every Tuesday and Thursday, of course. We should mention, because we always want to tell people about this, there is now such a thing as thetwomikes.tv. Which involves you and I filming ourselves doing lots of different things.
That's
We are shortly about to start doing something called Head to Head, which is going to be in the style of, for those who remember it, the style of Alas, Smith and Jones, where basically the camera comes in very close.
That's right.
Not too close, obviously, in your case, because people won't get frightened.
No.
You know. Basically, it's a profile, side-on picture of us talking about the big issues of the day.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
We also have the MG Kitchen, where I cook things for you, and you judge them on how good they are. And I think in the next few weeks you'll be seeing a beef stroganoff being
made. That's right, very nice.
You're going to do your pear flan as well, because even though it's called the MG Kitchen, Porky will do some of his own creations.
Yep.
And, of course, we have the Porky Quiz, which a lot of people miss from the radio.
Yep.
We do the Porky Quiz on TV.
We do.
Which is fantastic. So get yourselves over to thetwomikes.tv.
That's right.
And you can subscribe for just $2.99.
$2.99 a month. There is now over 40 hours of backlog material.
There's a lot of stuff there.
That's right. If you haven't got in yet, get in. And believe me, you won't be able to watch everything on there between now and Christmas.
No.
And, of course, if you've got one of our favourite features, which is the Fleet Street Tales.
Fleet Street Tales.
Which is all about what we do.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the Spice Girls there, Quiz, and that is on TMTV.
Yes.
Isn't it brilliant that they've now made the official announcement and the tickets have sold out in seconds for six
stadium tour, right? Because they're going to start off...
They're doing stadiums as big as the Etihad in Manchester.
They're doing Wembley.
They're doing Wembley.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I must admit, when it was announced, and I, you know, it was so heavily trailed, it wasn't really a big surprise.
Yeah.
But I was actually rather surprised that they were going for a venue that big. Because, I mean, I thought to myself, I can see them doing the O2, which is what people like Take That do.
Are they actually doing Wembley Stadium?
They're doing
Wembley Arena.
I'm pretty sure they're doing Wembley Stadium.
I think so, because it's a stadium tour.
Yeah, it's a stadium tour.
I'm sure you're right.
And I thought to myself, you know, there's 100,000 people having to get into that stadium.
I think it's 90,000 there.
You're in
show.
In basically, I mean, even U2 don't play Wembley anymore.
No.
You know? And they're massive, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I saw them at the O2. Mm. You've got Rolling Stones can probably just about fill Wembley Stadium.
Do you know, there's I not think very the Rolling many, Stones will do it again.
There's not very many bands that can fill a stadium.
No. Well, U2 do, obviously, because they're the...
No, they don't anymore, though.
They did
the O2, which is an indoor know, place, which is probably about 20,000.
Right,
know, something
okay.
like that. You get people like Coldplay could probably fill a stadium.
Right.
But, I mean, there's not many... But I mean, that is a very ambitious number of tickets to sell. Are you telling me they've sold them out already?
Yeah, they sold them out within seconds. Sure? Well, all I'm saying is that these days, you know, a lot of scalpers can get involved. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Scalpers, the American expression for people who buy the tickets up and then try and flog them on the black market for more price.
Yes.
But the claim is that the tickets went within seconds, okay? Because electronically, that is what can happen these days.
Yes.
Now, what I want to say to you is that I'm a huge supporter of the Spice Girls.
You always have been.
Always have been. But if it lasts, I'll be amazed.
Well, you think they might have a big row?
Well,
I think they need the money, though. Isn't that why they're doing it?
One in particular needs money, and that is Scary.
Scary,
who
Mel B.
Yeah. Mel B.
Yeah, Mel C. Mel C is sporty, who actually, I think, of all of them, has aged the best.
Who?
Mel C.
Sporty.
Yeah.
Well, I think Emma Bunton, Emma B, or
Baby Spice,
has aged very well. I think she looks terrific.
I suppose, I'll tell you what I saw. The official picture that came out was quite heavily airbrushed, I think you'll find.
Yes.
Because Scary.
Well, I saw him live on TV a few days ago.
Well, I saw Scary on the Loose Women show a few days ago, and she didn't look great.
No, I agree with that. Now, she is the one putting all the energy behind this reunion. And Alison Boshoff, who is a terrific
Daily Mail feature writer,
well, showbiz feature writer. She writes fantastic background pieces. She knows everybody. I read a piece on her a few days that she wrote a few days ago, the whole thing. And Mel B is apparently $39 million in debt.
$39 million?
$39 million.
How the fuck do you get that far in debt?
No, I, you know, I'm not making an accusation. I said I read this in a newspaper, you know. And now, don't ask me.
I'm not even sure a stadium tour will pick up enough money for that for her.
Exactly. Apparently, she's gone into all sorts of projects that didn't work. She's been countersued, can you believe, by former husbands and boyfriends who've taken money off her, not the other way around, relationships have broken up, right?
There was that very Belafonte? Messy divorce.
Was it a guy called Belafonte?
I'm not sure. The very messy divorce that involved a lot of threesomes with the nanny.
Yes, there was that one. That was Belafonte,
I think that was him.
She was also...
And there was a bit of a sort of... what can only be described as horizontal refreshment
of
a bisexual nature.
And of a triple nature.
Yes.
And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
She was also married to that great actor,
Eddie Murphy. I don't think she was ever married to him, was she?
Yeah,
I
mean, they had a child together.
I know they had a child together. I
thought they were, but what I'm going to say is...
He's got 10 kids now.
He's got 10 kids.
Eddie Murphy's got 10 kids by all sorts of different women.
You're joking.
I mean, he was the massive sort of shagger of shaggers
in
his time. Yeah.
Now, I can't believe, unless he's fallen on hard times, that he'd be wanting money off, a girl from the Spice Girls.
No, he's got a fortune. Every time Beverly Hills Cop gets shown, he makes another million quid or something.
That's right. However, nevertheless, with what's described as bad business decisions and... poor investments and all that kind of stuff. She's racked up 39 million.
Yeah.
So she's the driving force behind it. Now, the thing is, as those who followed the Spice Girls in the early days, the reason it broke up in the first place was because Jerry Halliwell and Scary Spice, who are both back together now, both demanded to be the leader of the band.
Oh, really?
Leader of the group.
Yeah.
And they broke up because they came back from one tour in America and they wouldn't even travel in the same cars back to the airport to get the plane on. Wouldn't even get on the same plane.
Well, because funnily enough, when we were talking about the Spice Girls reunion at some point the other day, it was all about the fact that, oh, hang on, Posh isn't part of it now, so that can't be the Spice Girls. But then everyone had to be reminded, well, actually, Jerry walked away at one point and they still performed without
him. That's right, yeah.
So they've already performed without one of them.
Yeah, that's right,
Now they're just performing without a different one.
Yeah.
And well, I mean, Posh Spice basically doesn't need the money.
Well, not only that, she doesn't want to belittle herself.
No.
And I think it is a little bit belittling.
I think it is.
You know, for these girls to get up on stage and pretend that they're just past their puberty teenage years, jumping them down.
Well, I mean, the idea of people calling Baby Spice Baby Spice. I mean, you know, she's a woman of like 40, isn't she?
She's got children.
Yeah.
She does
a
commercial radio show on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
So that takes the mystery away right away. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, when these people come out of retirement, it's because, like, Kate Bush.
Yeah.
Nobody's seen Kate Bush for 10 years.
But Kate Bush is a slightly different kettle of fish in a way, because Kate Bush is a kind of musical genius.
Yes, she is.
I must admit, I didn't really know that until I watched a documentary about her.
She was
amazing. Spice Girls were just a pop act that were invented by Simon Fuller.
Yes, but
they were very good.
But they carried out their duties very well.
And
they performed. But what I'm saying is, if you were listening to Emma Bunton one Saturday morning, and then all of a sudden you're reading the paper on Monday, they're charging £120 for me to see this woman on stage. Apparently she's part of the Spice Girls, a lot of people won't know. How can you do that when the current Spice Girls are Little Mix, aren't they?
Well, they are also
very successful.
Well, they are.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the difference, I suppose, is that we were all quite scandalised. I remember the Spice Girls way back when my daughter was a little girl, because that was the era.
That's right.
And I think anyone from about the age of, say, 30 down to maybe 25, that's the Spice Girls market.
That's
you know?
Right.
Now, whether they can get the market, which is now Little Mix, which is down to sort of 14, 15-year-olds, I'm not sure.
I'm sure they can't. Now, for instance, the Rolling Stones, who've been going for 40 years, can still attract baby boomers, right? Because they grew up with them.
Yeah.
But there isn't enough longevity in the Spice Girls' career as it was. Mm. They're only there for 4 years, and then they split up.
Yeah.
Are there enough people, as you quite rightly said, enough people to fill all these stadiums?
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
I mean, because, I think there's enough people that they could fill up. I mean, the way that some bands will do it is like, for example, when Coldplay started to get big, they decided, right, we'll do Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
But they didn't say we're going to do 10 nights at Madison Square Garden. They said we're going to do two. And then they sell the two, and then they do another two.
Yeah.
And then before you know where you are, they've done 10 nights in a row, which is fucking tremendous, right? And then U2 came along and went, oh, bloody hell, they've done 10, we better do 11.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't go to Yankee Stadium and go, right, we're going to do one big show.
That's right.
Without knowing that you can sell it out.
No, I totally agree.
Because that's embarrassing.
I totally agree.
I mean, you and I are doing our big Christmas show coming up again at the Shepherd's Empire.
Yeah.
Big venue.
Yeah.
You know, but if we suddenly said, oh, I know, why don't we go and do the O2 in North Greenwich, which is 20,000?
That's right.
You know, we'd be sitting there going, it'd be a nice payday.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if we can actually do that.
Everybody comes along.
You know.
Not that we're not popular, of course. We're very, very popular.
We are.
But
we're not
remember,
the Spice Girls.
We're not the Spice Girls, absolutely. And people get it in all sorts of other forms as well. The Spice Girls are only going to be up there on stage, not making new records or anything like that, which they're quite right not to do, because people only want to hear the old records and want to hear them up there. But again, they, I mean, for instance, old Sporty Spice, right, she would do handstands on stage.
Yes.
Now, what are you telling me now?
And high kicks and all that.
Yeah, high kicks and all that. You're absolutely right. A 40-year-old woman who's got children and who has also become best recognised as the most gifted singer they had.
Yes.
And she's done duets with Brian, what's his name, you know.
Brian Adams.
Brian Adams and people like that. Yeah. Does she want to now go back, literally in time, and put a tracksuit on and start doing handstands on stage?
Well, it's like they always say, as long as you need the money, there will always be time for you to do something like that, I suppose.
I think they'll hold themselves up to ridicule if they do that, you see.
I think the tricky part is going to be, one, how do they produce the show? Because in the end, it's no. If you're doing a stadium show, you can't just turn up and sing
anymore. No.
You've got to do all sorts of pyrotechnics.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have to show all sorts of...
Got to walk up and down gangplanks and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, someone was telling me about the Take That show, which they now do.
Yes.
Because the Take That show is apparently brilliant if you're into that sort of music. I mean,
that's
I'm not particularly, but...
They have all sorts of giant
they arrive in
models
on,
and
trains
all that.
And, you know, they're on different platforms. They're coming out of the floor.
Yeah.
Similar to you, too.
I came out the floor in Newcastle,
you did indeed. Yeah, that was very funny, actually. Yeah, that was a very good idea. Later locked yourself in the,
I did,
in the fire escape.
That's right, I did,
I've still got that picture
exactly,
of you looking,
looking through the
glass,
window.
Which is brilliant.
Help!
Trapped.
Let me out.
Way
I tried to creep
Newcastle.
Out, right, because I'd had enough of the everybody that night.
Yes.
I'm getting out of here.
Well, you normally got to that point earlier than me, to be fair.
Yeah, that's right. So I thought, I'm creeping out of this theatre. So I went down this corridor, and it said exit.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this is just an audience exit.
Yeah, yeah.
And there'll be a fire door at the end. So I went through the first fire door and it clanged
Which
shut behind me.
Which is one of those push bars
open
things,
that's right?
Right,
easy.
Yeah.
But I didn't realise there was then a gap of 6 feet to the next fire door, which went out onto the street, but which was chained up.
Right.
So I couldn't
That's supposed to be illegal, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
of course it is.
You're supposed to chain up bloody doors.
Of course it is. Chain up fire doors. Right. And it was chained up and then I couldn't get back in.
Right.
My signal wouldn't work on my phone because I was trapped in this
vault.
And
like, it was underneath the stage.
It was underneath the stage and all that kind of stuff. And I was, help. And luckily your daughter, Emma, thought, you know, where's Mike? And went looking for me and found me. I could have starved.
Oh, I know.
Could have starved
you could be
and
there
died
now.
At first. I
you could have been still there now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
yeah.
we were all getting bladderated, basically, and we didn't really know precisely what had gone on.
No,
and it wasn't unusual for you to disappear because we thought you'd go back to the hotel. I ended up back in the hotel in the Shark Bar.
Yes.
With a load of people.
Wonderful bar.
Until about 3 or 4 in the morning.
The girls in that Shark Bar,
the waitresses.
Very well, they weren't all tattooed, were they?
Well, they were quite well
tattooed. All right, waitresses, the barmaid, most beautiful girls
Very
I've ever seen.
Very short skirts.
They're fantastic. They're absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, apart from on this podcast here, I have to sort of say, oh, the people in the Shark Bar were beautiful, in case I get accused of sexual discrimination.
Well, hashtag me too.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I'm only attracted to women.
Uh-huh.
So I'm saying the women, they were very beautiful indeed.
I think you can get away
now,
with that.
Talking about the world of rock and roll and all that kind of stuff, let's go back a bit because I've come across a sad story. It's a Beatles story, and you know,
does it have to be?
Yes, I tell Beatles stories all the time because the Beatles were the biggest phenomenon ever in pop music.
Uh-huh.
But I thought I'd just bring this to your attention because it came up in a research document. There was a guy called Mal Evans, and Mal Evans was a bouncer at Liverpool's legendary Cavern nightclub.
Oh, yeah,
and
is this the original Cavern?
The original Cavern.
Yes.
And on the first occasion that Brian Epstein, who ran a furniture shop around the corner, believe it or not, that's what he ran.
Was he from Liverpool, Brian Epstein?
Brian Epstein's from Liverpool.
Was he a Scouser?
His family were posh Merseysiders, and they referred themselves as Scousers. Posh Merseysiders, his father had a chain of furniture stores.
Right.
Brian Epstein ran one, but had actually said to his father, looking forward, you know, this, you know, all these groups around all the time, and, you know, even Elvis Presley, shouldn't we have a little corner of the shop where we sell, like, these pop records?
Yeah, yeah.
And his father sort of conceded and said, well, if you think so, you know, because Brian Epstein was only, he's only 26 when he discovered the Beatles,
okay?
So he walks into the Cavern, and the guy who was, like, quote, security on the door was Mal Evans.
Uh-huh.
And Brian Epstein, who spoke terribly well, and said, hello, I'm sorry to bother you. He said, my name's Brian. I'm from the furniture store around the corner. I haven't really come here to bop with these young people.
Uh-huh.
He said, it's a bit dark and sweaty for me. He said, but there's no chance of me just standing at the back and having a listen. And Mal Evans said, yeah, whatever you like, mate, you know. You can do whatever you like, as long as you pay your money.
Yeah.
You know, 3 and 6, like, you know, it's 2 hour set. You say, you just stand there, like. And then when everybody had gone afterwards, he waited and spoke to John Lennon and said, have you got a manager?
Right.
John Lennon said, what? You know, and that's how it started. Wow. Anyway.
Was that after they'd been in Hamburg or before?
It was after. It was good. Right. They'd come back from Hamburg. They'd finished Germany. Finished the Reeper Bahn.
Who was it that took them there? Somebody else took them there.
There was a succession of people. Mm. One of them was called Williams, Alan Williams.
Right.
And he was their kind of road manager.
Because that was a great idea to take them there.
Yeah, of course it was. Everybody went there in those
days.
They
forged their kind of...
Yes.
You know, their sort of formative years.
Yeah, yeah, and all
but
that.
But also,
yeah.
They probably got quite a lot of... bad stuff out of their system, shall we say?
Oh, yeah, I would think so.
Bad behaviour.
Oh, absolutely right. Yeah, yeah. You know. Terribly bad behaviour. Mm. Absolutely right, yeah. Anyway, so this guy, Mal Evans, was known as the Gentle Giant. Mm. He became their chief roadie,
right.
Chief gopher, chief anything, you know. Uh-huh. And he travelled with them all the time when they, you know, right. Mad years when they were, you know, like, you know, people were burning Beatles records in America. Oh, and yeah. They got arrested in Japan and all that got arrested in Indonesia for uh-huh. not going to a banquet where the leader's wife was
really?
Their hostess and all
oh,
that
dear.
Kind of stuff, yeah.
Right.
But, anyway, when the Beatles broke up, this shows you the cruelty of life, right? When the Beatles broke up, there was nothing for Mal to do. He was the minder for the Beatles, the group.
Right.
And even when they stopped touring in 66 and then just made all their brilliant records in Abbey Road,
right.
they still had Mal around all the time. You know, he was still a gopher, still, you know, kind of minding all that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. When they broke up, nobody bothered speaking to him. So he went to Los Angeles, right, carrying the reputation of being the Beatles, but nobody like knew the Beatles what, you know what I mean?
Right.
Wasn't a producer, wasn't all that. Tried to become a record producer, right?
Yeah.
But he got depressed because nobody had taken a notice of him. He hadn't done anything. So in 1976, he was living in this pokey little place in not a great part of Los Angeles.
Right.
It's like West Hollywood or something. Yeah. And... and his girlfriend rang the police and said, Mal is raving and confused. And they said, why is that?
Right.
Why is that?
He's been on the jumping juice.
Yeah. She said, he's taken too much Valium.
Oh, right.
So they said, OK, we'll come round. Mm. Four officers arrived, right?
Yeah.
And Mal came out the house with an air pistol in his hand.
Right.
But didn't know why he was handling it, OK?
Uh-huh. Right.
When he raised the air pistol towards the cops...
Right.
Six policemen shot him at the same time.
I was going to say, that's not something you want to do in LA.
Exactly.
Fucking hell.
Exactly.
You know, even I know that.
Yeah, yeah. And but this is the best bit. Six policemen shot him at the same time.
Right.
Two of them missed. But, yeah, and he was a hulking great man of 6'3" tall. Four of them hit him. He died instantly.
Jesus.
Right. Yeah, okay. They'd asked him only once to drop his weapon.
Right.
But because he was holding it in his hand and it was pointing upwards. The minute he turned it round, and he was only, like, looking at it, he wasn't quite sure he was on it, he was shot dead with four fatal shots, killed instantly, right? None of the Beatles attended his funeral or ever spoke to any members of his family ever again.
Huh.
How about that?
That's awful, isn't it?
How about
and
that?
And why is it now being remembered? Because presumably that was quite a long time ago, right?
It's been remembered because one of the family is going around trying to research his life and all that, potentially for a book.
Right.
And so it's...
But it doesn't sound as if he was associated with him for very long, was he?
He was. He was right from 61 in the cavern to 70.
Okay.
And that's the whole of the Beatles. That is that's the whole of the Beatles.
Yeah.
So if he'd have lived, he'd have had a great book to write, you see what I mean, about travelling with the Beatles and that kind of stuff. However, one year later... George Harrison sent an anonymous cheque to the family for £5,000.
Wow.
What a nice guy George Harrison
that
was.
That is nice. But I mean, when you think about it, £5,000 for a life.
Yeah, but it's in those days.
Considering how much money they've got.
It's in those days. I would say that's £50,000 today.
Still quite a lot, small amount of money.
From multimillionaires, it is. But I mean, considering the others didn't.
Mm.
And by the way, I can accept why none of them went to his funeral. The Beatles were so famous then.
Yeah.
So very famous.
Yeah.
If John Lennon, and John Lennon died 4 years later, this is 1976, if John Lennon had turned up at the funeral of some guy who was shot by the Los Angeles police, you know, for waving a gun around, what would that have done for anybody?
No,
you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, George Harrison's name came up just the other day when I was
seeing
this song, because there's a new book out. Philip Norman's got a new book
he
out.
He has.
About Eric Clapton.
He has. He has. And funny enough, I've seen some of that.
Okay. In which he's very, I would say, down on George Harrison and the whole business with the, you know, the love triangle, Patty Boyd, whether Eric Clapton stole her away. I mean, he basically more or less says that, that George Harrison was such a mad shagger that basically, you know, she had no choice
but to leave him,
to move on because he treated her abominably.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, the picture he paints of George Harrison is not one of a particularly nice man.
George Harrison met her in the goods department of that train in A Hard Day's Night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the goods wagon.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was playing a schoolgirl in white socks and pinafore skirt and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
George Harrison said, the minute I saw her, you know, I knew I was going to marry and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, pop stars have funny marriages.
Well, they do. I mean, if you remember that great film that Martin Scorsese's done about George Harrison.
Yes, I've seen Dark Horse.
Yeah. It's called All Things Must Pass.
All Things Must Pass. I've seen that one as well. It was a dark horse,
But it was terribly sad in a way because his wife or his widow, you know, the one who was with him when he was attacked in the house and all that.
Yeah, what's her name? Dahlia or something?
I can't remember. She's American. But she
has she's also part Indian. Okay. She's of Indian instruction.
But she's got an American accent anyway.
Yes, that's right.
You mean Native American, I presume?
No, I mean Indian from the country
India.
Mean
from India?
Yes,
oh, sorry.
Yes.
Anyway, she she has a terrible sadness in about her when they talk to her about his infidelity.
That's right, yeah.
And she just says, well, you know, he caused a lot of heart of hurts. And you can tell that she's really in a lot of pain about that.
Yeah, sure,
you know?
Sure. But her her son, their son, had a lot to do with the production of those videos.
Yes, indeed. So here we are.
Yeah,
this is on the
absolutely.
Record.
Yeah,
we've got still much to do, but not very much time in which to do
it. Well, I want to give you a health tip now, okay? Right, now, there's all sorts of things that we're told to do on a daily basis, keep our health good.
Uh-huh.
One of them, and this is literally my... I'm giving you this ahead of the game, okay? The crinkling here...
Is this one of your health journals?
I'm going through a health journal, and I'm actually getting to the page.
It's funny, it sounds like newspaper, that, but it's not a health
journal. Come on, look, this is the pages I'm wafting through. Right, now, what I recommend you to do, because obviously, you know, parts of your health will be a bit frail, you drink too much, you smoked for about 40 years.
Well, do you know, and, I don't feel unhealthy, you know, I have to say.
You're a bit overweight.
I am a bit overweight, but I don't feel unhealthy. And every doctor that I ever speak to, and I speak to quite a few doctors for what we do for a living, they always say, by far and away, the best thing you've ever done is given up smoking.
Exactly. Yeah, you, but still in your body.
You haven't given up smoking.
Do you know how long it'll take the tar in your big left toe to exit your body after smoking for 40 years?
How many?
10 years.
10 years.
10 years for all that tar goes.
Well, I'm nearly 2 years in.
Yeah, but you'll take it up again, you will.
No.
As soon as you're free of family responsibility, as soon as your kids get to about 20 or something like that, you'll take up smoking again.
You're never free of family responsibility. Yeah. I mean, my daughter's 27.
No, I mean immediate family responsibilities.
My daughter's 27.
Putting a roof over your children's head.
I can't leave her. I can't leave this mortal coil. Yeah. She would be destroyed.
Yeah, yeah, well, of course she would be destroyed.
I have an absolute duty to stay alive as long as I can. That's one of the reasons I gave up.
I don't think your children love you that much.
They love me. Unbelievably.
Not that much.
Huge amounts. They do. They would be lost without me.
Even you have said, and I hope I'm not, you know, revealing here a family secret, but even you have said that...
that depends what you're going to say.
Your two sons are getting to the stage now where they're saying, hey, push off, Dad. They don't want anything to do with you.
They've not actually said that in many words. But clearly, they're at that stage of their life where I'm not very cool to be around.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I'm their parent.
Exactly.
You know, like a bonfire night, for example.
Yeah.
You know, my oldest son of the young two went off to be with his mates because he's that age. He's 14.
Yeah.
He's not going to be hanging around with his mum and dad.
No, of course not.
You know, so he wants to hang about the fish and chip shop with his mates.
Yeah, right.
You know, he had 20 quid in his hand.
Yeah. Where did he get the 20 quid from?
He got given it by his auntie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She gave him 20 quid.
That's Maury.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right.
Well, she was here last month, and so she gave the kids 20 quid each.
No, that's nice of it. Yeah.
And
I hope he didn't spend that on... on buying all his mates fish and chips.
Well, luckily he came back with 10 quid of it, so he did well.
Okay, yeah.
You know.
Because, you know, it's a big thing when you've got money in your pocket, you know, flash it around, you treat all your mates, they just take advantage.
Oh, I know.
I told you that mate of mine, he worked in the oil fields and came back bought everybody Chinese dinners every night.
Right.
Complete tosser.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, what I was going to say is... Eh?
That's a bit harsh.
He was a complete tosser.
Well, he bought everybody dinner.
Yeah, but I mean, the tossers were really the blokes who sat around the table and took it all.
Yeah,
you know?
He wasn't. He was a
generous
guy.
Yeah, well, he should have wised up after night two or night three, you know.
What is his health advice you can give me anyway?
What I'm going to say to you is, and I might be able to help you because I have connections.
How's your health, by the way? Because let's face it, you're the one who's got the frozen shoulder.
Yes.
The sciatica.
Yes.
You've got the nose issue.
Yes.
You've got the diabetes issue.
Yes.
You've got the acute heart failure.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You were also, I think, having some kind of arthritic problem with your knees, weren't you?
Well, no, I've got head pain.
Oh, you've got head pain. Yeah, and how's that going?
Well, it's not good.
Well, hang on. You're giving me fucking advice, right? You're practically a walking member of the Walking Dead.
I feel like I'm wearing a helmet which is inflicting pain on the outside of my head.
That can't be good.
No, seriously.
Well, I thought you were getting that sorted out.
And I went to see... first of all, I went to see the chiropractor.
Yeah.
And he said it would be irresponsible of him to do anything until you've been to the doctor and checked out that you haven't had what they call a trauma, i.e., you know, a fracture or something
like
that.
Well, you haven't hit your head or anything, have you?
No.
You haven't fallen over.
So I went to see the doctor, and it was a lady doctor. Yeah. She did everything. She, you know, looked into my eyes with a light, and she felt my head, and felt my nose. She said, no, there's no trauma, there's no broken bones, anything like that. So I said, well, I want an x-ray.
Right.
She said, well, I don't think
you
need...
Well, you've turned into some kind of hypochondriac.
No, I'm not turning
into
hypochondriac.
Like Woody Allen in that movie, Hannah and Her Sisters.
No, I'm not. And now the pain's going down my back. And the point is, I feel like somebody is hitting me on the outside of my head with a hammer all the time.
Do you
right?
not have, like, is it a pinched nerve, maybe?
No, it's... Do you know what I think?
Can you
be?
Move it from side to side without it hurting?
Not easily.
Really?
But funny enough, I saw my niece this week.
Mm.
She's very much a girl about town and all that. And she has recommended me to her Indian head massagist. What are you laughing at? Hey? Yeah?
That would be great. Wrong? Can you video that, please? When you go to don't you do the old Ray Parlour manoeuvre when you go in and you sit down and he goes, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
And you go, I'll have a short back size.
Never played for England again after that, you know? That was Glenn Hoddle with Eileen Drury. Yeah. Never played for England again.
Well, what's the Indian head massagist? Or some would call him massagist. Masseur, isn't it? Masseur?
No, it's the massagist.
Massagist?
Indian head people are called massagists.
Is this Indian from India or North American Indians?
No. The people who actually apply it can be of any gender whatsoever or denomination.
Oh, yeah.
But the process is called Indian head massage.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you remember Medicine Head?
Hey?
Do you remember Medicine Head?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard one of their records.
Yeah,
who was in Medicine Head?
There was two guys, wasn't it? Do you remember?
Just want to take a ride.
No, that was Hawkwind.
Oh, Hawkwind, okay, yeah.
I'll see if I can find Medicine Head.
But anyway, look.
Go on.
So I'm going to try and get that sorted because when I came out, I said, look, I don't accept there's nothing wrong with me. There is something wrong with me in my head. So she
I think we can all tell you that. There's something wrong with you in the head.
I wish you'd take these health things a bit more seriously instead of dismissing them. So then she said, okay, well, I'm going to refer you to an NHS massage unit.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I said, well, I'm going to the Indian head massages soon. She said, well, you know, these are qualified people and all that, so I'll probably do both anyway. Because I just want to get rid of this pain in my head, which is a problem. But anyway, the reason I've decided to help you out is that what you need more than anything, right, and this beats anything you've ever had before, you need good oral bacteria.
What?
Good oral bacteria.
Well, my mouth is fitter than it's ever been.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Right?
Yeah, that's
because you know what I was told by my hygienist, who I see now on a like basically quarterly basis.
Yes,
used to be a monthly basis. She said, in all seriousness, if your mouth is unhealthy, it affects the rest of your body.
That's right.
And when my mouth, before I got my teeth done, my mouth was pretty unhealthy.
Yes,
you know, it was full of bacteria. Yeah. The gums were bleeding when I cleaned them.
Well, it's supposed to be full of bacteria.
Yeah, but the point is, it was bad bacteria.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
You know, and you're going to tell me I'm going to brush my tongue, aren't you?
Well, it's better than that because I'll tell you what it is.
Go on.
New scientific research, this is in my health journal, suggests that getting a healthy balance of bacteria in your mouth, particularly on your tongue, which has more than 200 different kinds of bacteria, is the key to health and even looking younger.
Yeah.
Good oral bacteria helps the production of a molecule called nitric oxide, which in turn plays a crucial job in regenerating damaged and old cells. Now, the way you do this is a great new doctor called Dr. Nathan Bryan has invented... And he's from the Baylor College of Medicine in Texas.
Okay.
You know,
I've heard of that.
Yeah, you have? Yeah. Okay, yeah. He has invented...
He's in Austin for some reason. I don't know why I think that.
He's probably in Austin.
Might be in Austin or
I
Dallas.
I went to Austin when Waco was on.
Yeah, I know.
We'd been there like 5 days, so that night's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I went to Waco, and then he set fire to...
The alcohol, tobacco, firearms murdered about 25 people. Right?
Yeah, well, that's where I bought my snakeskin boots.
Yeah.
Or crocodile.
You need to bring those in one day.
Yeah, they don't fit me anymore.
Really?
And a crocodile belt. Right. Went with Alan Hall. And he spent all day in the Texas Rangers Museum pouring over the chronicles of how they got Bonnie and Clyde.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
He was big into the crime business, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, But anyway, what this doctor, this great doctor, Dr. Nathan Bryan's invented is an Amano tongue scraper. I'm going to show you a picture of it, right?
Okay.
That's a picture from my medical journal.
Yeah, it's got a sort it's sort of a U shape, isn't it?
It's a U shape with a handle on each end of the U.
Yeah. And you kind of pull it across your
tongue. You pull it across your tongue.
Yeah.
Pull it across your tongue, right?
I don't fancy that, to be honest.
It costs £13.
I'm not buying one.
But it will completely change your state of health.
Okay.
Dr. Bryan This is the specialist from Baylor College of Medicine. He's a specialist in molecular medicine. He says, data suggests that the bacteria on the tongue contributes about 50% of the body's total nitric oxide production.
Okay.
Tongue scraping will allow for more diversity, so the good bacteria flourishes and generates more nitric oxide.
Well, he's going to generate himself a lot of dollars if he's the guy selling this thing, isn't he? Because if he wants to get thousands and thousands of people to buy it, he's going to make a load of money.
Now, what he says is, there have been tongue scrapers in the past, but they mostly consist of a U-shaped piece of metal that is sometimes attached to a plastic handle or handles. The scraper is then gently dragged across the surface of the tongue, forward from the back of the mouth after brushing, either in the morning or at night. But the reason this great new one that he's got is better is because, what is it? It's because, I'm trying to find out why it is good. It's because, yes, latest scientific findings are new tongue scraping is not good. The practice dates back 1,000 years. In Indian Ayurvedic medicine, practiced by people in jungles.
Is this like Indian headman?
Yeah, that's right, yeah, yeah. The toxic coating of the tongue is recommended to be left in place for good health, okay?
Yeah.
Now,
I've managed to find the Medicine Head song. Do you want to hear it?
What is it?
In the Medicine Head, you'll know, you'll recognise this.
Right, go on then, go on.
This is your era.
Yes. You need to hear
very
some
much
words.
The
70s. Rubbish. It's rubbish.
You don't remember Medicine Head?
No, that's not a great record in the 70s. Switch it off, please, because I haven't told you fully about the... Now, here we go. According to the doc, tongue scraping will help your teeth get whiter. Study by the Journal of American Dentistry found counts of Streptococci, one of the main bacteria that forms yellowing plaque, increasingly reduced and receded when the tongue is cleaned, okay? Now, I can't quite work out why this one is better than the rest, okay?
Neither can I.
But anyway, I recommend to anybody listening now, go out and get yourself an Amano tongue scraper, costs £13.
What a load of
change cobblers. Your life.
Rubbish.
Change your life.
Well, are you going to get one?
Yes, I am, yes.
Why? You've got enough problems. I mean, I don't think you should put anything metal, if it is in fact metal, in your mouth at all, because it might create more problems for you. You've got some pretty dodgy-looking teeth going on there, right?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, you have.
I haven't. I've got great teeth.
No, but you've got lots of implants, which are single implants, haven't you?
Yeah, and very expensive, £5,000 each.
That's nothing.
You know?
Nothing to me.
For one tooth.
Yeah.
For one tooth.
You were done. You know, you could have had the whole lot done for a lot.
Two
you know.
Done for £10,000.
Well, that's ridiculous. You're just making that up now.
Most of the rest are crowns, right?
Yeah.
And
so you haven't got any of your own teeth at all. That's what I'm saying.
I think I've got one
so
or two
So I think
left.
The danger of you putting the scraper inside your mouth is that you'll actually do yourself an injury.
Definitely not.
You might do yourself a disservice.
I think not.
Anyway,
okay.
Listen, we're running out of time.
Okay.
Is there anything you wish to say as a farewell to the people listening to the On The Record podcast?
Not really.
We'll be back every Tuesday and every Thursday.
Every Tuesday, every Thursday. Of course, we had, have heard by now a recent video, Porky Vision.
Yeah.
So there will be an Ask Porky coming up quite soon.
There will be an Ask Porky coming up soon. There will also be a Porky review of books, of course,
That's
as well.
Right.
And don't forget, if you wish to go and find tickets for our show, which is at the Shepherd Bridge Empire on December the 16th.
Exactly.
Go to Ticketmaster.
That's right.
And you'll find it there. Put the two mics into Ticketmaster and you'll find it.
They are going fast, believe me. In fact, only today we got a message from somebody who said, I'm so delighted I was able to buy 4 tickets of seats consecutively.
Yes.
Because so many seats are being sold. You need to move quickly if you want to get a seat next to those you want to sit with. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like an aeroplane, this theatre.
It's
you know?
Not. We don't charge extra for where the seats
no,
are.
No, we don't.
That's
but you need to get in quick.
There's actually nothing like an aeroplane.
Absolutely.
We're the two mics
we
on
are.
The record.
We are.
I ended up back in the hotel in the Shark Bar.
Yes.
With a load of people.
Wonderful bar.
Until about 3 or 4 in the morning.
The girls in that Shark Bar, the waitresses.
Very
well,
tattooed.
They weren't all tattooed.
Well,
they
were quite well tattooed.
All right, waitresses, the barmaids, the most beautiful girls
I've
ever seen.
Very short skirts.
They're fantastic. They're absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, apart from on this podcast here, I have to sort of say, oh, the people in Sharkwell were beautiful, in case I get accused of sexual discrimination.
Well, hashtag me too.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I'm only attracted to women. Uh-huh. So I'm saying the women there were very beautiful. Yeah. I saw my niece this week. Mm. She's very much a girl about town and all that. And she has recommended me to her Indian head massagist. What are you laughing at? Hey? Yeah?
That'd be great. Yeah. Can you video that, please? When you go to see the... Why don't you do the old Ray Parlour manoeuvre? No. When you go in and you sit down and he goes, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
And you go, I'll have a short back
front side. Never played for England again after that, you know? That was Glenn Hoddle with Eileen Drury. Yeah. Never played for England again.
Well, what's the Indian head massagist, or some would call him massagist? Masseur, isn't it masseur?
No, it's the massagist. Indian head people are called massagists.
Is this Indian from India or North American Indians?
No. The people who actually apply it can be of any gender whatsoever or denomination.
Oh, yeah.
But the process is called Indian head massage.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a medicine head?
Hey?
Do you have a medicine head?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard one of their records.
Yeah,
who was in medicine head?
It was two guys, wasn't it?
Just want to take a ride.
No, that was Hawkwind.
Oh, Hawkwind, okay, yeah. Even you have said, and I hope I'm not, you know, revealing here a family secret, but even you have said that...
that depends what you're going to say.